You know, I also just put on a shirt in reference to your tweet, Trey.
Yeah, it's important in case we want to do video or something.
And this morning, to get ready for my day, I shaved off my beard to reveal a mustache.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Could you paste a picture of that somewhere?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
Somebody built an Instagram interface on Heroku that lets me get all my photos immediately.
Oh, it was on Instagram. I haven't looked at my Instagram today.
Okay, here we go. Straight from the CDN.
Whoa. Nice. Strong stash, man.
I was looking it up. That's the paintbrush stash or painter's stash, apparently.
Have you ever done one of those, like the mustache May or any of that?
No, this is just a lazy beard.
I like it.
Thanks.
Very nice. So you were asking what was in the notes. You're looking at the notes.
I just added an immediate list for Jaw Grind discussion.
Oh, look at that. VimConf.
Yeah.
Jeremy Ashkernes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I guess we're going to cut all this initial part out.
I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Cool, yeah. So why don't you talk about those things you just pasted in there?
Oh, okay.
What's VimConf?
Well, VimConf, I saw flying through the Twitter, and I could not believe that there was actually going to be a conference about Vim.
Because who would care about such a thing?
It just blew my mind. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Just kidding.
Because it's a conference for a text editor. I mean,
right.
I guess it makes more sense than a TextMate conference.
Yeah, maybe.
So you go there, and this guy, and he's put... It's an online live streamed conference for Vim geeks. So it's not a real conference, it's an online conference.
Okay.
I imagine it would be somebody's presenting on a video with slides and maybe their face. I've been to a couple online conferences through, what are they called? Events for Humans? Events. No, that's not what it's called. There is a group of people doing online web conferences. I went to the CSS Summit, Environments for Humans, is the name of this company, and they do a series. Here's a link. They do a series of online conferences.
And this, okay.
And the one that I went to was a mobile performance, or just a general web performance conference. That was really excellent.
Was that before or after your excellent talk at DevChat?
That was before.
So did that inform some of the stuff that you
totally
shared there?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was good stuff.
Yeah, I felt really confident about what I was saying at that point, rather than feeling like I was just kind of making stuff up.
Speaking of that, are you, you have any more speaking gigs planned?
No.
Leading question.
That I'm hoping for is that my coworker Allison and I have submitted a South by panel. And
do tell.
We're excited. We're thinking it might go well. And this is something that you two will both definitely relate to. It's about the static site versus the CMS, or why we ditched our CMS and are using a static site generator. Not just a static site, but the actual generator. So we're using Frank, actually, for our static site, and we really love that workflow. We've got all these helpers. We get to use the Compass and various preprocessors to make our work easier, and all of our content, in addition to all of our code, is in version control. So we have tabs on absolutely everything, and we don't have to worry about losing stuff. And
So everyone should go to this link that'll be in the show notes and vote this up.
I think so.
Huh?
I think so.
Yeah. And so I was going to ask you, though, so you're, the marketing site for MailChimp is in Frank. The blog is Expression Engine, though? So is that right?
It's not. It's WordPress.
It's WordPress. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was Expression Engine.
And we have a few different components. So it's only the marketing portion that is static.
Sure. Yeah. And your app is actually PHP, right?
It is.
Yeah. Good times. Shop talk.
And we had really good luck with that, running the static site on Nginx. It's blazing fast.
Uh-huh. So are you doing this VimConf thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was interesting and a little bit absurd. Like, I'm not sure if I'm going to do it because it seems so absurd, but it could be fun.
Kale is a diehard Vim user.
Are you?
No, not really.
I was set up.
Yes. No, I mean, I use it a little bit from time to time just for simple tasks. And, I mean, I can definitely see why it's so attractive. Just the control set, everything done through the keyboard. I do like it.
I actually saw a job posting, and one of the requirements was a preference for Vim over Emacs.
There's no other option?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a preference of Vim over Emacs, but I don't use either of them.
First of all, you need to use an ancient editor, and then you need to prefer this ancient editor.
was it VI versus Emacs, or actually Vim?
It was actually Vim. Okay. Yeah, I don't think VI would really stand a chance.
Okay.
Because, so, I mean, you can get VI bindings in your Emacs if you want.
I don't even know what that would mean. Somebody, like, crinkling aluminum foil?
Oh, sorry.
What is that?
That is a bag.
What are you guys drinking?
I have a Shipyard brown ale.
Shipyard.
What are you drinking?
Is that an Atlanta beer?
It's not, but there is an amazing beer store in Atlanta.
I don't know why an Atlanta beer would be called Shipyard.
Yeah. That's right across the street from my apartment, and they have the biggest selection in Atlanta. It's amazing.
Nice. I'm drinking a Fat Tire in a can. Because, I don't know.
Fat Tire in a can.
Yeah, Fat Tire in a can. How about you, Kale?
I got a little bit of, I don't have any beer, so I had to go with a little bit more harder stuff. I've got some Four Roses single barrel action happening here with a little bit of ice and some Mountain Dew from earlier.
What, all together?
Chaser. No.
Oh, okay. So. Mountain Dew at 8:20 at night.
I know, I'll probably be up all night, but so it goes.
Yeah, maybe the whiskey will counteract it a little bit.
Hopefully.
And then another thing that this week seemed really interesting is this talk about CoffeeScript from its creator. And it's not so much that CoffeeScript is really interesting, although it is growing on me, but this is him actually talking about the process of implementing the language. And he kind of shows you how that whole process goes from the lexer and the parser on down. Yeah, that's the link. That was really cool.
Could you explain the difference between a lexer and a parser?
The lexer... I hope I don't get this wrong because I'm still learning it, but the lexer pulls apart the code in these tokens, and the parser takes those, and how does that work? Yeah, lexer does the tokenizing. It creates these tokens that are passed along. And what is the one called? The one that he used, he uses this thing called RACC, which I believe is RACC, which is a Ruby thing, but it's not RACC like the web server. And I don't see it when I Google for that, actually. But that's what he used. And there is a book that you can order that I have ordered that actually teaches you how to write and implement your own language on that platform. Although it seems like if you wanted to write a language, you could just target JavaScript because that runs everywhere. Right?
Mm-hmm. I've heard.
I'll give you a better answer to what are those pieces after I've read a little more.
Oh, that I'm satisfied. So this is a... So you've listened to this 45-minute talk?
I did watch the whole thing, not all in the same sitting.
In summary, what's the gist of CoffeeScript?
It's JavaScript with the troublesome syntax removed and the most repetitive things simplified. Imagine if you don't have to use parentheses or curly braces or semicolons, and it also has a white space delimited blocks like Python. So passing in a hash is really easy, really nice. The function syntax. I'm really enjoying it. And if you're using Frank, it's built right in. You just, in your dynamic folder, you create a JavaScript folder and put in like app.coffee, and that'll compile down to app.js within your static when you run Frank app. Yeah, it's totally built in from the get-go.
Is that recent?
No. Have we ever talked about Frank on the show?
This show barely exists.
Well,
go for it.
Frank is a static site generator. It was originally built as a rapid prototyping framework or unframework, and it was built by some dudes I worked with in Chattanooga. And it was built. It was originally on top of a Sinatra app, and then the guy stripped Sinatra out and wrote it directly on top of Rack for performance gains. And it's a really fantastic piece of software if you're just getting going on a project. Yes, talking about Frank. And so you can generate the project from the command line, and you can include a simple tag to automatically refresh the page every time you save a file. I really love that. And then you can use anything in like the whole Ruby toolchain of templating libraries and preprocessors. So HAML or ERB, and then you can get into SAS or less. I don't know if it even does less. I mean, why does less even out there? I just really like SAS.
Me too. We've used Frank at Emma too, but not for any production site. And we've used the HAML and the SAS and all, but not CoffeeScript. I don't think I realized it did CoffeeScript.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty nice. I mean, it used to ship in the starter project with CoffeeScript, and then they took it out because it was really buggy, and they weren't sure if they liked it or not, and since then it has really taken off. CoffeeScript it is. In terms of Frank, I've been using that even more lately for prototyping, and I've been using this front-end framework called Skeleton. It's from a designer at Twitter. So what I did was I took it and I adapted it to be like a Frank project, and then I put that in the Frank templates folder in my home directory, so now whenever I do Frank new, it'll just copy all that stuff over for me, and then I have a working... The best thing about Skeleton is it's a responsive... front-end framework, and it comes with some sensible default styles, and so actually for both of the 10K apart projects that I built, I started with that, and from that I had to delete a lot of stuff to bring it down. There was a lot of CSS I wasn't using, so it all went away. Yeah, that's it, getskeleton.com, and that's a really solid starting point in my opinion. I really like it, because Twitter just released that boilerplate thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's cool if you want to build something that looks exactly like Twitter, but...
I always call it boilerplate, too. It's Bootstrap.
Bootstrap, okay. Not to be confused with the HTML5
right.
boilerplate, which
exactly.
completely owns my GitHub newsfeed.
Yeah, I've started using this other thing for following repositories in GitHub? And not to get off topic here.
No,
but,
go for it.
It's this third-party service to just to track GitHub projects without seeing all the updates in your newsfeed, because it just gets to make it just makes GitHub useless when you're seeing every update to some big open source project like that. And it's called, it's not that great, and I don't have it installed on this browser. Code Drawer or something like that?
Shelf, I think.
Shelf? Code Shelf? Yeah, yeah, we were talking about that the other day, right? You all right? Let's see. Caleb, have you heard of this?
I have not heard of Shelf, no.
Code Shelf or something? Someone help me out. We need an IRC channel or something.
Yeah, here's something called Shelf. I don't know if this is the same thing. I haven't read it.
I will find it. There we go. Shelf.
No, that's not it. That's not it.
How do I get to my shelf?
Maybe if I look at my... Let's see here.
CodeShelver.com. Found it. Oh, but I cannot get what I wanted to get. Okay. Here it is. There you go. CodeShelver.com.
Yeehaw. Yeah, so this...
And I always thought that was weird, because when you look at the URL, it's /shelv/username/repo, but shouldn't it be shelf when it's singular?
Hmm. Non-native English speaker?
What is a shelve?
Shelving the repo, maybe.
It's not that great, because at least with the Safari extension, it gives you a warning every time you add something to your shelf, because it serves it over HTTP, not HTTPS.
Right.
And, yeah. So the plugin is kind of annoying.
Hey. But, yes. Oh, remember... Mm-hmm. When RDO had a HTTP page with an iframe that was secure, and I remember you tweeted about that, and I was doing something like that, and I believe that Chrome will now pitch a fit when that happens.
Yeah, I had a little blog post talking about how that bothered me, and I didn't use RDO for a long time because, just on principle, that... I'm looking for the article now. So they still have it that way, I'm pretty sure. But since they got the desktop app, it's kind of not as big an issue.
Right.
But I just feel like it's training users to not look for, you know, the little padlock or that, you know, the valid certificate before they enter their credit card on a website. Which, just asking people about that, like, after that started bothering me, I started asking people, and it turns out, like, even nerds like us don't necessarily look for that, which really surprised me.
Wow.
It would bother me. I would definitely question what they were doing.
But do you use, RDO?
I do, yeah.
But... So did you notice that?
I see
that?
What they've done now.
I guess I did not notice that.
See?
Now that you mention it.
That's what I'm talking about.
Let's see what we got here.
I notice now going there, they've cut that out. They've split the sign-up process up. First you just give them an email, and then you continue from there, from an email they send you. I guess at that point they can put you into a secure area. They've totally changed their sign-up process. Which is good.
So wait, it's a different page now?
Well, they've split the process up, and when you go there to sign up now, they'll only get your email, and then they'll send you somewhere else to finish, so that they don't have to put their whole homepage under SSL, because that'll really slow things down.
But lots of sites have that now. Like GitHub has that on every page. Facebook has that on every page. Twitter has that on every page.
Yeah.
That seems like the way to go, because then you can't use something like, what is that Firefox plugin where you can just sit in a coffee shop and see, you can log into everyone's Facebook account. What's the name of that plugin? You know what I'm talking
Fire
about.
Firesheep.
Firesheep, yeah. So you could totally log into someone's Ardio. You couldn't steal their credit card, but you could steal their, everything else.
Well, it's interesting. I'm trying to edit my existing credit card information on Ardio, and, it's a normal HTTP address, but they pop up this modal with, it just says secure form.
Yeah, which is an iframe.
It's concerning to me, even though it says secure form. Like, how do you know?
Right, exactly. And so I didn't use RDO on principle for that reason for a long time. But finally, when they came out with the Mac app, I relented. And I friggin' love it. It's a great service. I wish they wouldn't do it, this one thing. That and the whole hash in the URL.
Yeah, why? Why is that?
It's so that they can continue to play.
That makes sense.
Yeah, but they could progressively enhance up to use push state.
Exactly,
if
Steven.
You have a capable browser.
Hell yes, but the problem
uses the crap out of push state, and it's sexy.
Yep, I guess if they could do that and then degrade to the hashes on browsers that don't support that, that would be ideal.
Yes.
But I think hashes in URLs is just unfortunate.
Oh, well, then you're going to love my 10K apart submission that I made over the past week.
That doesn't count for things like that.
It uses the hash.
It's okay. It's like for big services like this, like Twitter. Like, that's really unfortunate that Twitter uses those, because there's no longevity to those kind of links, you know? They're going to be dealing with that crap for years.
That's going to be a pain in the ass to maintain. You're right, that does kind of break the internet, doesn't it?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Huh. Oh, with that note tray, I know what it says without even opening it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So we've tested it. I handed it off to my friend who just breaks things. That's like his thing. And he broke it immediately. Apparently, you don't want to send more than 2,000 characters in the whole URL.
Hmm.
The URL shortener will just say no, and I don't think the browser even sends it. I was looking in the console. It doesn't even send the thing, and he pasted in over 8,000 characters, followed by the words dead fish, and it just died. So now it gives you an alert if you put in too many, but I haven't actually found the limit. It probably varies by browser, though.
Hmm.
And first I was using Bitly, and weird URLs were coming back. But is.gd, that works really well.
Hmm. So Twitter wants you to stop using anything for shortening URLs.
PJAX, that's it. Yeah, they just want you to use that t.co, right?
Yeah, and they're shortening everything.
I wish I just had this pane in my account and it said your shortened URLs, and it gave me all the click statistics. That's the only reason people still use these other things that I'm aware
reason,
of.
Yeah.
And sometimes Tico just feels really slow. I was sitting there for a whole second waiting for Tico to resolve and send me along.
Yeah. And then people tend to shorten anyway, so it has to go through like two or three shorteners before it actually does anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I set up my own shortener. I kept thinking how I'm going to really regret not doing that. And then as soon as I had shortened 10 links, I regretted it. because I realized that for the rest of my life I have to preserve this domain and this all these redirects. Otherwise, I'm breaking the internet.
Don't break the internet.
So think twice before you set up your own URL shortener. Because one day you will break the internet unless you ask to have your children keep those redirects intact.
Well, that's one reason why the t.co thing is good, because the tweets are there and the links are there. So if the tweets are accessible, so are the links. And, of course, tweets aren't really accessible past, like, 3 days or something.
Maybe the internet itself could archive all shortened links and where they or where all redirects put, like, yeah, all 301s on the web. Just archive them forever. Yeah, it probably won't matter.
Well, you got to archive the site behind the link, too.
Yeah. That's why I use Pinboard.
I like Pinboard. Yeah.
I pay for the archiving service, so by golly, I'll have those dead links years in the future. And it's happened to me when I imported all my links from Delicious into Pinboard. You can check like which of your links had 404s. And I would go through and I was looking at them and there's some things I kind of wish I had, and it was the site's down, you know, or whatever, or the link has changed, and now it doesn't matter. Like as soon as I add something to Pinboard, they archive everything on the page, which is amazing. I like it.
What about Delicious? They haven't ever since the what was it, the YouTube guys that bought them?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And nothing's really happened since.
Not yet. Well, it took them years and years to launch a redesign of Delicious. Right? Like they had talked about a redesign of Delicious back when after Yahoo bought them, and there were leaked screenshots or something, and it took, it was like 2 years or something for them to launch the redesign.
Well, that was under Yahoo's clock, though, right? I mean, they were notorious for not really doing anything with any of their properties.
They screwed the pooch. Although, I mean, so it's kind of cool that they don't have that anymore, but I've already moved on. I like Pinboard a lot. And one thing I really like about Pinboard is that you can actually put URLs in the notes section. And they're clickable. Which I just really appreciate. Because I like to put a lot of times where I found a link in the note.
Oh, do you remember why that happened? Is you said to me you would switch to Pinboard if they implemented that. And I emailed the developer.
Oh, yeah.
And I told him that. And he said, I'll do that. And then he emailed me when it was ready. And then I told Trey, and then you joined.
Thank you for that.
That's another thing about Pinboard, is you can reach the developer.
Very responsive, yes. Yes.
I use Delicious, but the problem is I enter stuff all the time, but I never go back and look at anything.
I look at stuff all the time.
So it's like there's a bad disconnect there.
I'll go back and actually... I mean, I look for stuff that I've posted all the time, and I'll even go and sort of prune the links, and update the tags to kind of keep it more relevant. Yeah, I'm a bookmark addict. I don't use browser bookmarks at all, but I use things like Pinboard and Milkshake and Tumblr obsessively.
You're a good bookmarker.
Thank you. Jason mentioned Instapaper also. And I tend to go through phases of putting tons of things in Instapaper that end up being garbage. Like I use it as a dumping ground, and then every once in a while I'll go through and clean it out. And I do clean it out to zero like once every 3 months or something like that. And put the things that I actually care about that I read to the end onto Pinboard.
Pretty sure Jason, if I Instapaper something, it goes straight to Pinboard.
Yeah, I turned that off because I really want my Pinboard to be curated. I had I'm serious. I had the Instapaper thing. I had the Twitter, like every link on Twitter or every link from anyone I follow on Twitter was showing up there. And it was just garbage. It was just a bunch of garbage in my pinboard, and I want that to be the stuff I really care about. So I turned all those things off. And I only put things there once I know I want to ever reference them again. Jason is asking if anybody uses the Safari reading list that's new in, I guess, Safari 5.1 slash Lion.
No, I don't think I've ever opened up Safari unless it was just a quick browser test.
I love Safari. That's my main browser.
Actually, I used to use it primarily. That was kind of a joke.
It's okay if you don't. I still love you, even though you're not a Safari user. I know you like your Vim plugins for Chrome.
If I could just browse the internet from the command line, that would be awesome.
Links.
Yeah, fire up links.
I wish we were Skyping right now from the command line, too.
In Morse code. What's your main browser, Kale?
Chrome, but I was the same way. I used to use Safari religiously, but once the Omnibar showed up in Chrome, it was all over. I can't get away from that.
I like it, but one thing that really bugs me about Chrome now, I like Chrome a lot, but none of the Lion gestures work in it. At least not the version I have, which is like 13.
I haven't gotten to Lion yet, so.
Jason, are you on Lion? Do you use Chrome? You're on Lion. Lion. On Lion, yes. is Chrome your main browser? Chrome crashes on Lion, so he's using Safari. Oh, you said that already. Had to switch to Safari. Safari is such a memory hog.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous.
I think it's all the screenshots of all the sites that you visit on the, whatever that page is, the thumbnail page.
Milkshake. Is that what you're talking about? Is it you talking about Milkshake, Kale?
No, just like, you know, when you open Safari and it's got...
Oh, I don't, you know, open
30, that. Yeah, 35 thumbnails.
I don't have that page enabled.
And it downloads new versions of it every time you open it up, so it's downloading, like...
Turn that feature off. Turn it off. Yeah, I haven't used that in a long time.
What about Firefox 6? Anybody tried that?
I use it... I mean, to test, basically. Yeah. It's fine. I don't know. There's no compelling reason for me to try Firefox. It seems like Chrome has kind of taken the reins of the alternate browser.
Yeah.
Yes. Although this guy that I worked with at Medium, he's now working at Mozilla, and he works on Firefox. So I feel obligated to try out each release out of, like, a friend obligation.
That's not right.
That's why I tried MailChimp. but seriously, Jason points out something good here. That the reason Firefox is good is because of Firebug. Firefox is a great vehicle for Firebug, which is still better than the WebKit Web Inspector.
I disagree.
Totally is better. It's faster. At least on everything I've tried it on, it's got this great key command. You do Shift Command C.
Yeah.
To inspect an element, which works in Chrome, kind of, but it's always really laggy. I don't know. I do like Firebug better than Web Inspector, but I don't use it anymore. Why do you think Web Inspector is better?
Initially, I just liked the way it looked better.
Yeah, this looked better.
And it was not as good. Like, it did not have autocomplete when you were editing CSS, and you could not tab through key value pairs. But I was using it anyway. But now it has that. So it's fantastic. It's just as good as Firebug. And then it also has some cool panels. I'd actually have to bring it up to... Here we go. Command-Option-J. That brings up the console.
Yeah, I do. I do Command Option I.
I really like the console here, and it also I put in the PageSpeed plugin. I really love the PageSpeed plugin, and I like how the network panel works in here. I feel really comfortable just looking through everything. I can look at all the headers that I need to, and I'll also grab the content of like say there's an image. And it's put in there in such a way that you can't get to it. You can just look in the network panel, and you can see where it was downloaded, and you can just grab it. You can, and then you can look at all the scripts. When you've got the console open now, if you do Command-L, and you're like looking at some JavaScript file in there, it'll actually do a go-to line, Command-L.
Tell me that again. Start out.
Let's see.
Where did you...
I believe maybe you have to be in... Where's the console? Console. No, it didn't work that time. Sometimes you can do Command-L, and it'll say go to line. I think you have to be looking at scripts, though.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Nice. Huh.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah, that is nice.
And I really like the JavaScript console.
Yeah, console is really nice. Although, Firebug makes it easier to enter multi-line scripts in the console. How about that?
Well, view source in Chrome is way better looking. Syntax highlight and all that. I know Safari's kind of lagging there.
Yeah, it is.
Firefox, I think, is catching up. But
Firefox does have, like, clickable links in view source, doesn't it?
Yes, there all the assets. You can just go to all any of the assets that are in there, and that's helpful.
Yeah, Chrome's pretty cool. That's what I use. I mean, not to browse the web, just to develop. So, Jason, do you use a? I don't know if he's listening anymore. Do you use Chrome for, or do you use Safari for development? Yeah, whatever.
Oh.
No, I was asking Jason, but I don't think he's there anymore. Because he was talking about how Chrome was not good in Lion, which I have not found. And he thinks Firebug is better than Web Inspector.
Firefox is awesome for the hard refresh. That actually, it's a really hard refresh every time. I feel like in Chrome, I'm not getting hard refreshes like I think I am.
Yeah, I always have to do Command-Shift-Delete and clear the cache.
Or, the cool thing about Chrome is you can bring up an incognito window, which will never cache anything, ever. Yeah, it is the porn browser, but it's excellent for development because it never caches anything. So you're always getting fresh everything.
Why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, so you never have to clear your crap again if you just use an incognito window.
Dude!
That is today's takeaway.
That is. That's, I'm done.
The more you know.
That's great. Cool.
Because knowledge is power.
Whoa. What's going on? What is this? You know, if you type / TMYK in campfire, something magical happens.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, because I've pasted that specific image into campfire multiple times.
Well, now you don't need to.
Oh, my God. I need to log in right now. People are going to get in the morning and say, what were you doing at 9:50 talking alone? Uh-oh. Well, I'm in the propane client, and nothing magical happened. I'll try the real web interface. Do you use propane?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And some more you know works in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everything works in there.
It's not working for me. Did I type it wrong?
/ TMYK?
Yeah.
Sucker!
Why won't it work for me?
Well, hold on, let me open up propane and try it.
I'd like a screen grab.
Yeah, let me see if it works. I'm pretty sure that's the... Oh, oh hell, that's not it.
Oh, God, I felt silly.
Oh, there's a new version of propane. Hold on, hold on. Hold on. Oh, okay. What just happened?
I heard it.
How did you hear that?
I don't know, but it played through somebody's stuff.
Are you picking up my system audio?
I guess.
That's not good. So, the thing is / play TMYK.
Oh, here it is. No way. I'm looking forward to this.
If you've ever looked at the CSS sprite that all those are contained in, there's a lot more stuff in there.
Oh, I never, that's I never
just,
looked.
That's a huge graphic, just full of stuff.
Do Kale, you don't use propane, do you?
No, I do not have propane.
It helps.
I love this feature. The more you know, I'm playing that song over and over. I'm going to destroy people with that tomorrow.
Don't tell them what it is.
Heck no. I can't wait to play crickets on all of their jokes.
Oh, you didn't know any even crickets?
I didn't know any of these, period.
Oh, dude.
I am pinboarding this right now. Wow, this gives a whole new use to Campfire. I love it. I feel the need to go back and curate my pinboard because... I've just been instapapering all this junk there. And now that I know that you actually curate and you expect other people to curate there.
No, I don't expect other people to curate.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, I used to subscribe to the RSS of my network, but it became way too much.
Do you still use RSS?
Very much so, yeah. I use Google Reader
a lot.
What's wrong with RSS?
Nothing. I still use it all the time. I just hear people asking that a lot and laughing if you do. But I actually love it.
I kind of love / hate it. I don't know how I would keep up with... I mean, if all the blogs I really cared about had, like, Twitter feeds or something, maybe that would be okay.
I was going to say, what's the alternative to... If you just give up RSS, you know?
Well, there's things like start.io. These little homepage services that you can just keep a...
I found one the other day. Coder.io.
Keep a collection of,
yeah.
Keep a collection of bookmarks that give you some sort of iconic representation of when they're have been updated. And that's it. Mm. So you actually just go to the site to read them.
I don't know.
Yeah, definitely check out that coder.io. That's interesting.
What is this?
It's like your go-to place for all industry news because you tell it what hashtags you want.
Oh my god, yeah, this looks horrible.
This is going to destroy you. Like it's just
no, it's too much stuff.
Well, that's why you have to put in your subscriptions. Like, I get things on JavaScript, WebKit, Node, algorithms, languages, and HTML5. Right? And that's all I see.
I don't. No. I would much rather follow some people on Twitter whose opinions I respect that share links like that.
Yeah, they filter it.
Yeah, I don't want to. I don't want this fire hose. This does not look appealing to me at all. Like, I mean, I get overwhelmed with just the stuff on Twitter and what RSS I do subscribe.
You know what I've found to be the best thing is the Peter Cooper stuff that he's doing right now.
Oh yeah, yeah, his stuff's great.
Do you get all three of his newsletters?
Yeah, I do.
That he sends through MailChimp.
Yes, thank you, Stephen. Asshole. Hey, my face is on two of the three of his newsletter web pages, so there. With a link to an Emma blog post.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, his newsletters are great. Although I just really roughly skim them, to be honest.
Oh, yeah? Do you listen to his podcast?
No. I mean, I have a little bit, the Ruby Weekly or whatever, the Ruby... What's it called?
There it is, JavaScript Weekly. That's... Oh, that's the one, but then there's the JavaScript Show.
JavaScript... No, wait, what? I didn't know there was a JavaScript Show.
Yeah, that's the one I was referencing. I'm sorry, I'm giving you the link right now. So... They're already on 12, but they're all pretty recent. And I drive, you know, a lot, like on the weekends going out of town. So every week, I go through one of these on the drive.
Nice. See, what do you use for podcasts?
Not iTunes. I forgot what it's called. Instacast.
Yeah, me too.
That's where you tweeted it, and then I said, "Oh, that looks nice." So I got it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. JavaScript Show. All right, I'm subscribing.
It's great.
And this is Cooper, huh?
Peter Cooper and Jason Cipher, who co-hosted the Dev Show with Dan Benson.
And they also do the Ruby Show.
Yeah, and they're using the same song that those shows use. And I was surprised that it wasn't on the 5x5, but 5x5 hasn't been talking about as much geeky stuff. I mean, it's geeky, you know, but it's on a different level of geeky. You know?
Well, they're doing a lot more sort of industry analysis, and they've got that show that's about the mobile industry and like finance or something.
Yeah, they're
boring as hell.
They're losing me.
I mean, I really like four of their shows a lot.
My favorite shows right now are the Changelog and the JavaScript Show, and those both come ahead of any of the 5x5s. But there are a lot of good 5x5s. I like Build and Analyze.
I can't listen to the Changelog. I used to really like it, and actually the episode with Paul Irish was really good.
They just that one was good.
I don't know.
They had a few recently that didn't. It was a little too DevOps-y for me, and not really stuff that I'm doing. But
this stuff from 5x5 is so, I mean, relatively polished and like light on the sponsorship and light on the music, and just every other podcast I listen to, and it starts out and it's got this friggin' theme song, and then it goes through and goes through three sponsors, and I fast forward, and it's 5.5 minutes in, and then the content starts. I'm done. I delete it. The first time I listen to a podcast, it's like that. I just delete it because I know people can do better. I mean, there's tasteful ways to do that, and I'm not. Changelog is fine. I mean, it's not that bad, but the stuff like the talk show, Build and Analyze, Hypercritical. Like, those shows are so good and so well produced.
I like those, yeah. Back to work. I like back to work. Build and analyze.
Anyway, I used to really love Changelog, and Floss Weekly was another one I really liked, which was Leo Laporte.
Okay.
The twit stuff, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Does he not do Floss Weekly anymore?
No, he's still... It's not Leo Laporte anymore, but it's they're still doing it. But I downloaded an episode recently, and it was like 7 minutes of ads. And then it was like the two people talking about how their weekend was. And I was like, this is... I can't do this.
Well, Twit is big time now, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I have a few other things that I really like that take the place of some of that. Like, they come in right after the Changelog. I do Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and Radio Lab, and This American Life.
Yeah, I like This American Life. I haven't been keeping up with that one, though. It got too depressing for me.
Yeah, I've kind of switched to Radio Lab, because it's more of like a science technology take on interesting things. And...
I don't know if I'm in a mood or something. This is going to be the Trey bitching hour. I can't listen to Radio Lab.
Oh, man.
There's too much, like, clever sound effects and stuff. It just annoys me. You know? You know what I'm talking about? How they just, they'll have, like, a little segment, and they'll switch, you know, they're talking about something, and they'll talk about something else, and then they'll have this little clever sound bite of, I don't know.
They're professionals.
I have an issue with I have lots of issues. It's good content, though, for sure. Radio. I know Jason, if he were here, would talk about how much he loves Radiolab.
Yeah, that's great.
He's the one who got me to listen to it at all in the first place. I should broaden my podcasting horizons. Basically, if there's not a 5x5 show that I haven't listened to, I will turn on RDO instead.
Yep. Well, you anyway. Know, you had that issue with RDO, but now there's some, like, easy competitors, right? Have you done Spotify? Like,
I tried Spotify when they opened it up. I didn't care for it as much as RDO.
Yeah, I didn't either. The interface was just, I don't know, it was too much.
Well, yeah. Spotify has an HTTPS. They have the SSL in place when you sign
Kudos.
Up.
Kudos for that. If they could make it actually a good service, then maybe I would switch. I know people love it. It's free, so they've got that going for them. But then there's, like, ads for Coca-Cola between every song.
Well, don't you just have to pay, and then you don't have that anymore?
Yeah. But I wasn't... I mean, they didn't impress me enough to want to pay for it, even without the ads. I don't know. It was kind of confusing to me, the interface. Maybe it's just because I'm used to RDO, or...
Yeah, I didn't like it as much either. That's why I also have not switched. I'm still on the RDO.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Did we have any more links to discuss?
I had a couple, but... Nah.
No? What?
Okay. I've been reading about Spine this week. Spine is... Last week we talked about Backbone quite a bit, and Spine is the lightweight alternative.
Okay.
This should be... There it is. It's right there in my history. And it goes along very well with this book that I started, which is really fantastic. Did I talk about this? I don't remember, but here we go. This book, JavaScript Web Applications, just came out. It's this guy I've been following on Twitter, Alex McCaw, and he gives like a really fantastic overview of setting up your whole MVC stack on the front end, and he walks you through it in such a way that by the time you're done and you're looking at this library, you actually know what it all does, because basically you're building Spine as you reason through all these scenarios, so you really understand what you're doing by the time you come out. And he skips all the introductory JavaScript stuff that, like, a lot of times I'll buy a book and they'll start out really slowly, and it loses me. But he just skips all that. Just dives right in. It's great. So if you're thinking about writing your own, you know, front-end library, or you're really interested in, it does get a lot into prototypes and all that type of stuff.
It's really interesting how everything's moving to the front end like that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm happy about that.
I like writing in JavaScript. I think you'd really like Node if you tried that out.
Yeah, I should try that. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, as the more I do JavaScript, I like how JavaScript looks. I've looked at CoffeeScript and it just looks confusing to me. Like if they've stripped too much of the, you know, syntax out.
I feel like it can pretty directly translate one to the other visually. Like,
that's cool. Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually tried to write any, so that's...
What really helps is that peep code. He will show you a JavaScript expression, and then with video, he'll take out one piece of syntax at a time, replacing it with its CoffeeScript alternative. So pretty soon you can just look at a piece of JavaScript code and see how it transforms.
Yeah.
And he really drills that into your head. It was really helpful.
And Rails 3.1 just came out today.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the one that includes CoffeeScript support, like out of the box, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And it's got that new Sprockets asset pipeline.
Is that's the asset compressor and all that?
Yeah, because I've got a couple on 3.0 out, and kind of intimidated at upgrading.
Hmm. Really? Is it that much different?
No, but I just had a bad experience with it last weekend because of dependency clashing, where some packages were updating, others weren't, and...
Do you use RVM?
I do, but not well. I'm not a very good RVM user. I'm getting it, though.
Huh. So it's got... What other stuff was new? The Rails 3.1. It's got... SAS and jQuery is default now.
Oh, good.
And I guess it's like SCSS built in, or maybe that's just part of what the that asset management thing will deal with by default.
I'm really excited about these new campfire words. Tomorrow's going to rule.
So, Steven, what kind of stuff you got for the 10K apart?
Okay, I did one last week, and we looked at it a bit, and I did put it on its own little host, so I'll put it in there, Nomroulette, and all it does is locate you, and then it gets places near you from Google, and then it picks one, and it gets even more information about it, and then it shows it to you. And it says, you should eat here, and you can give it a spin, you just click where it says give it a spin, and that will actually spin. And that is a CSS animation. And it'll just tell you where to go. And we had a lot of fun. Me and Aaron, we had a lot of fun coming up with the little sentences that surround where you need to eat. Like, gobble up some blank turkey. Like, that's my pun. I really like that one.
Wait, what is it again?
In this case... Ted's Montana Grill. Gobble up some Ted's Montana Grill, you turkey.
Nice.
Yeah, mine gave me Food Lion right out of the gate. Try out some Food Lion, little guy.
That's a great restaurant.
So yeah, there's not much around me, so that's totally acceptable.
Chow down at the Varsity Champ. And yeah,
Subway.
And we got that little fork to go in like that. So that was really hard to get into 10K. Yeah, I actually was at like 12K, and then I data inlined the fork image and the gun fork that you see up there, and I was down to like 8K. And I data inlined the favicon. So if you're having a hard time getting everything in there, just inline it. And then the other one that I did for the 10K part was that Go Note thing.
Yes.
And I haven't submitted it yet, and I'm not sure if people will even get it or not. Maybe I should add a link on the front of, like, this is what you can do with it, and put in, like, a grocery list or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is that what you want it to be used for?
I don't care what it's used for. I don't know that it has practical applications. It's just fun to conceptually kind of, like, what if everything about a page that you needed was in the URL?
Interesting. Well, I've been working on a project for the 10K apart, but it's not anywhere near done yet. And it's called Flickstagram.
Oh.
And the idea is, I really like how I've got this iPad app called InstaGallery that's just an Instagram viewer. And it just pulls up one Instagram photo at a time. You can make it full screen and you just swipe through them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go through and you can favorite it and you can add comments, but you know, that's all you're doing. It's just a nice way of viewing those photos. And the main interface for Flickr to view recent photos from your contacts is really lacking.
Yeah.
All you can see is, okay, of your contacts, these contacts have updated new things. It doesn't give you a stream of these are the new photos that you haven't seen yet. So what I want to do is create an interface kind of like the InstaGallery iPad app where you can see just one by one, one at a time, the new photos from your contacts.
Ooh, that's cool. You're basically taking the Instagram interface and plugging Flickr into it?
Yeah. So that's
kind of like that.
That's kind of the idea. And then I would also like it to... I know, right? I would also like it to show non-public pictures, because I've got some contacts who will sometimes flag something just for friends or family to look at and not public. And those don't show up in RSS. So a lot of times I will miss those until months later I happen to come across it. Like, why the hell didn't I see this 6 months ago or whatever? So it'd be nice to have a single place to go to just see what's new on Flickr. And so that's the kind of the idea here. And so in order to get the non-public stuff, I would need to use OAuth or something, you know, authenticate in some way, which I think may be possible just using JavaScript and maybe storing the auth key in a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
But I have decided for the sake of this contest, I'm probably just going to keep it to public photos just for simplicity, because I haven't even started to deal with the responsive stuff, which I would like to do, to maybe load different sized images from the server depending on your viewport size.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not killing the downloads on an iPhone or something. You can just show the smaller ones then. So that's the basic idea. And as you can see, though, I haven't gotten too far with the implementation, but I have got it. Like,
you know, what helped me with implementing them quickly is I did all of them in Frank.
Oh yeah.
And then So I was doing them all in SAS, HAML, and even the CoffeeScript, yeah. And then whenever I needed, was ready to see how big the project was, I had a rake task that would build the whole thing out, and then it would go in there with the UE compressor and get everything. And then it would zip it up, and then it would tell me how big the zip file was.
Wow.
It really made my workflow faster after I put that script in place.
Do you want to share that rake task?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a pattern I've been using lately. You use Frank, so you'll appreciate this. Within the project, just create a www directory and have a rake task that runs Frank export into the www. And then you have the whole repository in Git. So you've got your dynamic stuff, and then you've got the exported thing, and you just commit as you roll things out. And then you put up a Git repository on your server, and you make the www directory the doc root. So when you're pulling into that repository, you're keeping everything in one repository, but you're able to pull in and serve up the static site every time you pull in.
Nice.
So I've been doing that on my own web server. So I also had a rake task that would build out the site and sync it up to wherever I had placed it with rsync all in one task. So that was pretty handy. I like rake. Anyway,
that is cool.
Kale, you did one?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been playing around with a weather widget. Here's the link. Basically, it grabs your location, and I've been playing around with CSS animations quite a bit. Yeah. So just depending on the time of the day, you're getting different
nice.
I love stuff this. Happening. It looks like Nick at Night. The clouds. And that typography is excellent.
Oh, thank you. It's some of the Google fonts that I've been playing around with.
Use the HTML5 boilerplate?
I started with that, and obviously I'm way over on file size, so I gotta trim a bunch of that out.
Are you doing that with the Frank template for the HTML5 boilerplate?
No, I just started with the huge, with comments and everything, so I've got a huge task ahead of me to get rid of a lot of that stuff. But got some of the responsive stuff in there. And,
It looks good at a small size. We're looking at it now.
Yeah, it looks good on the iPhone.
Yeah, I started at the iPhone size and it's been working up, so.
That's great.
Yeah, so it's cool. There's like, I don't know, 20 different background colors that depending on time of day and weather and all that stuff. So
really? Oh, this is really cool.
This is like, you could do something like this and add the home screen icon and the little meta tag to remove the browser Chrome.
You could build this for that WebOS.
Yeah. If you wanted no one to use it.
I'm sure they're going to license it, guys.
But that's all I want in the weather app. I want to open it up and tell me what temperature it is right now.
Right. That's great. That was the whole point, just simple temperature conditions and a little visual to.
I love how simple you thought with that. That's awesome.
This is great. I like it.
Cool, thanks.
And you can do up to three, so I might try to do another. Because why not?
Yeah, why not?
When is the due date?
It's a couple weeks, I think. September 12th, something like that.
Yeah, right about 2 weeks from now.
I have to come up with another idea after I finish this. So, Kayla, are you done with this? Is this?
No, I've got. I mean, it's pretty good in WebKit, but I got to put in all the Mozilla CSS, stuff.
And IE10.
Yeah, IE10.
That's one benefit to doing it in the Frank is you can bring in Compass and import Compass/CSS3 and use all their includes, and it will generate all the cross-browser stuff.
Can you give me the 30-second executive summary of Compass?
Yeah, in terms of how I use it
or
for
just what it is.
Built-in.
I'm still a little bit fuzzy about.
Well, I use less than half of its features, and here's what it lets me do: is I import tons of helpers, and it greatly extends what I can do with SAS in that. Just tons of helpers, lots of math helpers, and the CSS3 helpers. So I really save a lot of time, but there's a whole other component to it where you build these plugins that do this fancy stuff, and I haven't gotten into that at all.
So what's the math helpers? What do those do?
Compass. I bet that Google will not bring up anything.
Yeah, that's a not very Googleable
Compass
project name.
CompassStyle.org. Nope, no math. That was just baked into SAS.
Compass Style.
There's a topography import. There's a utilities import, and there's a CSS3 import. And it's got, like, the reset baked in. It takes a lot of the repetitive stuff, and it just gets them out of the way. Ooh.
So it's to be used with SAS only. It's a SAS extension.
SAS and SCSS.
Which is just another syntax for SAS, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's functionally the same as SAS, just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I've switched up to using more SAS lately. Like the shorthand.
I need to use more SAS.
Yeah, I've had a hard time getting into SAS. I love Haml. I think that's great, but I've had a harder time with SAS.
SAS is so much more useful than Haml. Like, Haml doesn't do magic like SAS does.
Yeah, Haml keeps everything nice and orderly, though, you know?
It does, yeah.
It's easier to diagnose problems, or it eliminates a lot of, you know, market problems.
But, I mean, SAS lets you do crazy stuff that you just can't do otherwise, like constants and mix-ins, where you can just define a block of CSS, and it's basically a function in CSS. So you can pass in variables and have it output a certain thing. And I guess Compass probably does this, where you can pass a pixel value to a Compass command or whatever it's called, and do a certain radius rounded corner that works in every browser or something like that. Right, Steven?
Yes.
I've never used it, though.
It's awesome. It just saves you time. Because otherwise you'd have to set that up for yourself every project.
That's cool.
Ooh, I found a use for my the GoNote thing. It's not quite as cool as a gist, but it's almost as cool. Hell, if I would just make it monospace, it would be as cool. There you go. So if you click on this, there it is. It is good link.
Hey, that's cool.
So that's like the task. It doesn't tell you the size there. Oh, look at all those double backslashes. Those are actually... There's an escape function on here. If you like, it says require backslash backslash file utils backslash backslash.
I'm not seeing that.
Yeah, I don't either.
Oh, maybe only Chrome is doing that. Well, that's good then. I'm glad they're not.
Yeah, I'm in Chrome.
What?
Yeah, I don't see it in Chrome either.
Oh, look in Safari. Oh, I still see it. Huh. So, what's it do? You have a target and a backup. The www and that, which is with an extension, and it'll actually frank everything out. And if that works, it'll destroy the backup, and it'll go in and compress everything and zip it. And then there's another task in there called deploy, and I just put in a little note there how that works. But it basically just runs rsync. And then you need to add a task default that does those two together. Which the syntax for that is a little funny looking. It would be like... I'll just type it in there. Break is pretty handy.
I need to learn the ways.
Learned it from doing that Rails tutorial, which you're doing, right? So you'll...
What Rails tutorial?
It's the Rails 3 tutorial that is available online. RailsTutorial.org.
I'm not doing that.
It's really fantastic. I paid for it. And, I bought like the videos, and they were super handy. You build a Rails 3 app, and you do it the right way. You do it in Git, and you push to GitHub, and you deploy to Heroku, and you write test. You do test first development the entire way through. So you learn all of the best practices of the Ruby community, and you actually deploy stuff. And by the time you're done, you've created a Twitter clone with your own authentication model. All that. Instead of using a library, he actually teaches you how that works. You actually salt all the passwords and store the hashes. That was really awesome.
That's really neat. I've got the peep code.
Yeah.
That's all.
For some reason, the peep codes on Rails never clicked with me like the other peep codes did.
The one on Git is how I learned Git.
Yes. That helped a lot.
I'll have to check this out.
Yeah, I recommend it.
How much is it?
I started doing some Rails stuff at work.
So it's $85, huh?
I see, $95. Does it say $85 on there too?
It's $95 with the PDFs too.
Oh, I see.
So you can get a couple of the episodes for free.
But you don't need the PDF. The thing is, the entire thing's available for free. I'm sorry. In the nav, you just go to book. This is the best thing about it, is the entire everything is right there and kept up to date, and it's all completely free. So if you don't need a video, you don't have to. It's just like I learn really well from videos, so I got that.
Oh, I do too. I love videos.
But you can do the entire tutorial in HTML. It's just HTML.
Huh. Cool.
Where is that URL? There's that URL. Yeah. Anything else new this week?
No, I don't guess.
Steve Jobs.
You want to button this up, Steven?
Yeah.
Yes, we've been recording for what?
I think a little over an
hour and a half. Not quite an hour and a half.
Yeah, hour 20.
Yeah. So what do we do from here? Do we put all these recordings together into one?
Yeah. So you just send me your files, and I'll put them together and put it online.
Great.
I don't know if you want to like. Put it on, you know, Dropbox or S3 or something, and just give me a link. Doesn't matter.
Do you have a server somewhere? You could just give me all of your keys, and I could.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No problem.
I could put it in there for you.
Yep. Yep. Can you create a public bucket on S3 or something? I wonder. I guess you can give read write access to it.
Dropbox works just fine. I'll put it right in there. I stopped using Dropbox for anything important because they have rights to use all of it.
Really?
Yeah, so I used to have all my code in there, all my Git repositories, double backed up. And I'm sure it applies more to photographs than code, but they totally have access to that, and they can use it for their own promotion. And as soon as I found that out, I moved everything out of the folder, and I canceled my 50-gig plan.
Now, is this after the password fiasco? Or what?
This was a few months ago. Maybe a couple months ago.
They really have the rights to use it, or just access to it?
It's just Dropbox, or...
Steven?
I'm looking because I don't remember the specifics.
You're spreading fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Yes. Fear monger.
Yeah. I mean.
But the thing is, this was scaring me like months ago. It's totally not scary anymore. Unless you're still using it.
Do you keep
it.
Your? Huh. Do you keep your 1Password database in Dropbox?
I do. Because I have to get it to my phone.
What about, yeah, that's true.
It's worth the convenience, but I mean, what's the likelihood of them actually going through your stuff?
Well, and that's encrypted too. So what are we going to do for next week?
Oh. I don't know.
Will the contest be over by next week?
No.
Not yet.
Should we do another one by next week? I won't be... I gotta work on the one I got.
I don't want to do another one. That would stress me out.
Let's not do that.
For some reason, doing a second one was kind of stressful. I was like, I don't have any ideas. And
I mean, personally, I would like to do something with Rails.
Okay. Let's do that.
I don't know if you guys want to do anything with that. I mean... I don't know what. Maybe a really simple project to get started with the things that Rails 3.1 offers.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe, like, just build something that has that uses that asset compression. What's it called?
Sprockets.
What's the feature called? Sprockets?
Yeah.
Sprockets. Find a link.
There it is. No, that is not helpful at all.
Oh, good.
I mean, it's all the source, but isn't there a better... Mm.
Okay, so there in that article I posted earlier... Rails 3.1 release notes. Yeah, this is it right here. That's got all the good overview of what stuff is new. Asset pipeline.
Yes.
And an asset pipeline guide. Kale, would you be up for playing with Rails? Or?
I can give it a shot. It'll be super basic on my end. But
yeah, me too. I mean, just playing with the feature.
Me too. I've actually got a freelance project right now that I'm doing.
Do we want to do a project?
Yeah.
I mean, just something really basic, just to kind of play with the feature and to be able to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, and do we all want to attempt the same one so that we can compare?
Now, I'm just saying, like, build something that uses the asset pipeline.
Okay.
Period. Okay. Doesn't matter what it is. Just like a home page in Rails that compresses the media.
All right. And deploy it.
You don't have to.
I want to deploy it to Heroku because I want to see how that works with them having
I
want to
do that too, actually.
System.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Optional, Kale, if you don't have a Heroku account.
Okay, yes, I do not.
It's fantastic.
Although, it's free.
Do you mostly do Python?
No, actually, I've been doing a lot of PHP, like cake PHP framework stuff.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if we have, Stephen, if you want to hang on a couple more minutes, Kale, you should talk about your site you launched today.
Sure, yeah, I can talk about that for a minute or two. So it's called Seedling, and basically it is a garden tracking or garden logging app. So, you know, if you're pretty obsessed about your garden, you can just enter in all these different data points, like, you know, what your yield was, how tall your plants are, you can upload photos. It's just a real easy way to keep track of, of your backyard garden. I mean, it's really just for hobbyists and that kind of thing. I really just kind of wrote it for myself to keep track of all this stuff and have a record. Like, for example, the...
Wow,
sample
you launched a full-on app with a sign-up?
Yeah. So, yeah, like the sample I've got on there now under... What's growing is, you know, just this little tree we planted in the front yard. And so, you know, I just think it'd be cool to take pictures every few months and I don't know, just have a record of it and go back and look at it. And so that's basically it in a nutshell. You know, once
what
you start getting
good for graphs, what?
Oh, it's what's the name of it? It's that JavaScript based graph library.
The one you have to buy a license in it.
No, there's no license involved. I can't believe I can't remember this off the top of my head.
I know Cincha has a good one, and there's one from Dojo, and what's the one, that I'm familiar with? I'm looking it up. High charts,
that's it. Yep. Yeah, it's kind of cool. So, yeah, once you start entering in a bunch of data points, the app starts graphing it for you, so you don't really have to, you know, mess with all that stuff. But yeah, high charts is pretty cool, and the graphic customization is really nice. It's just really polished. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
And then you're running that on PHP Apache.
Yeah, Cake PHP framework, and it's just running on my, you know, little one-on-one account right now.
Is that your preferred thing?
Preferred hosting or framework?
Well, whichever.
Well,
open-ended question.
Just from the little bit that I've read and been poking around, Cake PHP is kind of... I think they're very heavily influenced by Ruby on Rails, and
yeah.
I'm somewhat familiar with that just from my last employer. We had our app based on Ruby on Rails, so that was kind of nice to make that transition. I'm not one-on-one. Yeah, they're okay. They're up all the time. There's never any downtime, but it's they have a lot of customers.
Wow. Right.
Very cool.
This was good.
This was good.
We'll collaborate by email and we already know, right? We're just going to do a Rails app with the pipeline.
The asset pipeline,
okay.
Yeah.
Right on.
And cool. So we'll do this again next Wednesday.
Totally.
Cool. Well, thanks for letting me sit in. It's been fun.
Yeah, you're going to do it again next week, right?
Sure, absolutely.
Yes.
Sweet. Yeah, and hopefully Jason will be able to join us. And
I hope so.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. We'll see you soon.
Okay, right on.
All right.
See you guys.
All right.
See ya.
Bye.